support comes from Tub Cove. With over 49 years of remodeling bathrooms, Tub Cove can help simplify the process, offering tub and shower replacements and full bathroom remodels. Local and family-owned, with a showroom in Redmond. Designs and information at tubcove.com.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Let's take a stroll down memory lane to January 22nd, 2018. It was the opening day of the world's first Amazon Go store in Seattle. The New York Times called it a store of the future. All customers had to do was pop an item in their cart and walk out. With the help of cameras powered by AI, Amazon charged you. No need for a cashier or a kiosk, even before the pandemic. Reviews hailed the seemingly automated experience as the future of retail. A little over 6 years into that future, in 2024, things are looking a little different. Amazon announced last week that it's laying off many workers on its physical stores technology team, and the company says it is replacing Just Walk Out at 40 Amazon Fresh grocery stores with something called Dash Carts, which can be used to scan your items and pay. So forget the future. These days, headlines are calling Just Walk Out a flop. And part of the failure here seems to come down to whether the underlying technology was ever fully automated as promised. Theo Waite covers Amazon for The Information, and he's been reporting exclusively on the behind-the-scenes reality of Amazon's automated grocery experience. Hi, Theo. Thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Libby.
So, Theo, a lot of headlines picked up your reporting over the last week, and they've been saying that this marvel of Amazon's Just Walk Out technology was actually a team of 1,000 workers in India verifying transactions as customers walked out of these stores. Now, Amazon has said that that characterization of what was happening is misleading and inaccurate. So I just want to go to the source, which is you, your reporting. What is the reality behind Just Walk Out? How was this technology working?
Like much other AI technology, Just Walk Out is a combination of, you know, machine learning and AI, as well as humans who are required to put in the data that trains the technology and double check when things go wrong. And there's this caricature of Just Walk Out that's kind of emerged in the past week where people are saying, oh, there are thousands of people that were watching you live as you shop and manually writing things down, and there was no AI involved with this technology at all. And that's not true. It's also not true, like Amazon would imply in some of their marketing materials, that Just Walk Out is basically magic and is this, you know, extremely automated store. The reality is that Just Walk Out was, you know, an interesting and advanced technology, but ultimately still required a lot of people in India who input the training data to help it recognize what you're picking and double check the system when Amazon isn't sure whether you actually took something or, you know, whether you picked up parsley or lettuce from a shelf.
So as somebody is shopping in an Amazon Go store or Amazon Fresh store and they pick up an item, when does the team in India come into the picture?
So if the technology is working as Amazon intended, they won't be involved at all, and you'll be charged as soon as you leave the store. In reality, though, some people, you know, will go to an Amazon Fresh store and not get a receipt until 5 hours after they get home. And in those cases, you know, part of the reason for the delay is that part of your transaction will be double checked by a reviewer who will look at the camera footage and make sure that you took something.
And do we know how many transactions were reviewed in this way? I mean, what was the rate of success?
So I had reported that as of 2022, so this could be a bit outdated, but I had reported that there were about 700 reviews per 1,000 sales. There's some nuance to that because not every review would have been of a sale. So like, you know, a review could be someone looking at an item and then putting it back. But the point overall is that there were far more reviews happening than Amazon would have liked.
So today we see these layoffs at AWS, which includes some of the physical stores team at Amazon. Do we know what's happened to the Just Walk Out developers and these AI trainers in India? What does the team look like now after the company has announced it's shifting away from the technology?
So there have been pretty significant cuts. As far as I know, It's mostly U.S.-based staffers who have found out they're losing their jobs so far, including people that would work on installing Just Walk Out in new stores and in supporting it. I don't know of any cuts in India so far, so I can't really comment on that. Amazon says, though, that they're still committed to using Just Walk Out in smaller Amazon stores like Amazon Go, as well as in third-party stores, which are generally smaller, like Hudson News stores in airports and concession stores inside arenas. But any teams that were working on large-scale installations for fresh stores or for, you know, any outside retailers that may have wanted the technology in a big store, it seems like those jobs have been pretty much eliminated.
Yeah, people who have been to a Kraken game at Climate Pledge Arena, which is owned by Amazon, probably have experienced the Just Walk Out technology with snacks they're buying at the hockey games. Theo, can you paint me a picture about Amazon's history here with the grocery space? I mean, Amazon bought Whole Foods in 2017. They opened the first Amazon Go store and used the Just Walk Out technology in 2018. And it seemed like they were making this really big swing to revolutionize the way people shopped for groceries. How is that going for Amazon these days?
So I would put Whole Foods and the other retail efforts in kind of two different baskets. I mean, Amazon bought Whole Foods in 2017, like you said, and it was already a very mature company that, you know, had a lot of customer loyalty and seems to, you know, have been doing fine since then. I wouldn't say that Amazon has drastically overhauled Whole Foods, but it's a pretty good business. Separately of Whole Foods, Jeff Bezos had this idea that if Amazon was going to get into physical retail, they had to do something very, very different. And the approach that they settled on was this very tech-forward approach, first in Amazon Go and then in Amazon Fresh, both of which were using Just Walk Out. But I think kind of the fundamental issue here is that Just Walk Out is ultimately kind of a technology solution in search of a problem. I don't think that most grocery shoppers were clamoring for something like this in their stores. And there are just other things that people care about more when they go to grocery stores. They care about good prices. They care about good selection. And, you know, critics would say that those had kind of taken a back seat at Amazon to this flashy tech solution that costs a lot of money.
And I think a lot of people actually like their cashiers. I think they like their people at the line when you check out. I mean, nobody likes a line, but I don't mind interacting with a human. And I think this idea that it was a technology in search of a problem is really interesting, Theo. I'm also curious about the overall shift in priorities for Amazon over the years, Theo. You saw this time when they were really trying to get into our physical space, like with Alexa technology and smart speakers. Of course, they were taking this big project on with revolutionizing the grocery space. Now, what do you see the company prioritizing these days in terms of growth?
I mean, I think it would be a mistake to interpret this as Amazon getting out of grocery. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think Amazon is going to turn around tomorrow and sell Whole Foods and abandon this business. I mean, the fundamental fact is that grocery shopping is a thing that, you know, Americans do at least once a week and often multiple times a week. And it is a really strong way to form habits with shoppers. Like, take Walmart, for example. Walmart has a massive grocery business and people shop there extremely frequently and they'll pop in for some groceries and then pick up other items that are much higher margin for Walmart. And if Amazon wants to keep growing its business, inserting itself into people's routines through grocery is a really good way to do that. And I think will remain a priority for the company. That being said, though, this is clearly a sign that they haven't figured out what their approach is going to be long term.
Is there anything else, Theo, that you want to add about the Just Walk Out technology, about Amazon's decision to de-emphasize it and move away from it in Amazon Fresh? And really, the fact I can't get over is that Amazon could never fully get away from the need for people to be checking these purchases and being part of the process. I mean, anything else you want to add about all this story that you really helped bring to the fore?
I think in general, it's a reminder that AI technology is being made by people and still relies on people to a great extent. I mean, independently of Amazon, ChatGPT, you know, Google Bard, a lot of these really flashy AI technologies that have gotten a lot of attention in the past year and a half, they still have to be trained on things that were written by people. And Just Walk Out had to be trained by people looking at images and oftentimes double-checked by real people. And I think it's a reminder that people shouldn't get too carried away by really impressive looking AI technologies and should, you know, remember that behind the scenes, there's probably a lot more going on to make them look so seamless than would necessarily be apparent at first glance.
Theo Waite covers Amazon for The Information. Theo, thanks very much.
Thank you.
As Theo mentioned, Amazon isn't the only company paying offshore workers to help its AI improve. The practice of paying cheaper labor elsewhere to do menial tasks like training AI or moderating content is common in tech. And it's something my next guest, Ben Shestakovsky, explores in his new book. Shestakovsky is a professor of sociology at the University of Pennsylvania and author of Behind the Startup: How Venture Capital Shapes Work, Innovation, and Inequality. Hi, Ben. Thanks for being on Soundside today.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So you study labor and technology, and you've written a lot about startups. What's your take on what Theo Waite has been reporting on at Amazon, the use reportedly of offshore labor to verify purchases in the Just Walk Out technology?
I think it's a very common phenomenon, probably more common than a lot of consumers and technology users realize. It's very common for tech companies to deliver systems that are purportedly automated and yet which are in fact backed by human labor, usually human labor that is outsourced to other countries because those are places where they can get access to labor in places with lower prevailing wages. So there are many recent examples. It's not just Amazon that's doing this. A couple that just came to mind to me were this recent news about a company that supposedly provided automated drive-throughs to major fast food companies. And it turns out that there were human workers in the Philippines who were processing similarly about 70% of the orders. There was a company called Expensify that told people that it was using AI to fill out your expense reports for you, but actually they were just being offshored to folks who were getting paid, a few pennies per expense report to fill them out manually. So this is a very common practice and was not surprising for me to hear about.
There's something incredible about the reasons that a company would want to sell the idea that everything is automated, everything is working through the algorithm and an AI in this case, when there is such a heavy amount of human touch on most of the purchases. What's behind the reasons that, you know, you would want to maybe keep that quiet?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of reasons why tech companies tend to hide this labor behind their supposedly automated systems. I think one reason to hide the labor is that it can help to actually boost the valuation of your company. When it looks like you are developing a fully automated system, then what that says to your investors, you know, whether that's venture capital investors for a startup or investors on Wall Street for a large publicly traded company like Amazon, it says to them that you are developing this novel technology that can scale somewhat effortlessly with very minimal cost, additional cost, and that it's the technology itself that's driving the value creation rather than, you know, people who have to be paid wages and they need to sleep and they need to take breaks and they're expensive and potentially inconsistent. So if you can convince investors that your tech can grow a lot without adding a lot more human labor costs, you have a very appealing proposition. And at the same time, on the flip side, if you make that work invisible, it actually helps to devalue that labor, right? So if nobody knows that those workers are there, it's easier for companies to get away with paying the lowest possible wages.
And that sounds like shareholder value. And that sounds like something you've been working on in this book, right? The kind of focus on financial incentives for shareholders and less on maybe the experience and quality of what's going on in the company.
Exactly. Yes. So one of the arguments I make in the book is that, you know, we tend to focus with tech companies on these flashy new technologies, whether it's the good stuff, you know, that we find very exciting, or the aspects that we find very scary. The focus is often on what is the technology itself doing? Tell us about these algorithms. Tell us about the AI. That's kind of always the focus, because that's the new sexy thing. But in fact, what I try to do in the book is to shift our focus to how these companies are financed and how the power of financiers is actually often what's driving not only the development of technology, but also how human workers end up getting incorporated into these systems. There's much more to the story usually than just some sort of new, exciting, magical technological system.
Your book looks a lot at inequality. Talk to me about the way these workers on the periphery of the industry, so in this case, you know, offshore folks who are employed to verify purchases at a Just Walk Out store, talk to me about their experience versus how workers in Seattle, maybe at the Amazon headquarters, are experiencing the industry.
Software developers at an Amazon HQ or other similar companies, their experience is, you know, often defined by, as we know, relatively high wages, perks, employment benefits. These are highly desirable jobs. And it's not only about, I think, their employment conditions, but also there's a certain level of excitement that comes with taking on the challenge of creating change, right? That's what their job is. It's to try out new products and see what works and constantly refine them. And there's an excitement to it. There's a challenge to it. If you have stock options, there's also, you know, the potential that you're helping to build your own wealth. On the flip side, if you look at these offshore workers, usually what you see is that they're hired as independent contractors. So they're not directly employed by the companies that benefit from their labor, and they don't receive employment benefits. In many cases, they don't even receive what would equate to a minimum wage, depending on where they are working. And I think from my perspective, one of the most important differences is that they almost never are able to share in the rewards of the successes that they're helping to produce. So, you know, if you are in HQ and you've got stock options and things are going great, you are actually helping to generate this wealth that you're building for yourself. If things go great and you're on one of these peripheral teams, it's very likely that there's really no additional benefit for you. All of the rewards tend to get funneled upwards to the elite employees and ultimately to the investors.
As artificial intelligence is making its way into more parts of our economy, more parts of the things that we interact with on a daily basis, what will you be watching for when it comes to the human element? Because this technology, to a great degree, still requires human verification, human training. And these are, you know, very repetitive, monotonous, you know, jobs that not a lot of people are necessarily going to be wanting to sign up for if they have a lot of options. What will you be watching for as sort of the AI revolution continues in our economy?
Yeah, I think you're right that it would be foolhardy to buy into the hype that our current wave of AI advances is, oh, this is going to be the one that really, truly eliminates the labor. I don't think that's going to happen. I agree we're going to see, continue to see human intervention kind of pushing at the boundaries, at the new frontiers of automation as we go along. You're also suggesting something that I also believe is true, which is that currently, we can probably expect that wages, working conditions in these kinds of jobs are going to be relatively poor. And I think we need to start thinking seriously about what we can do to ensure that some of these jobs are, in fact, jobs of the future. How can we build more transparency into AI supply chains so that, you know, we can all recognize that there are people in the loop who are making really valuable contributions to these products? And once we see that there is real labor here, that there are real people whose livelihoods are at stake, then we can do the things that we've always done to make sure that we're developing and enforcing the kinds of labor regulations and protections that people deserve.
Benjamin Shestakovsky is a professor of sociology at the University of Pennsylvania, and he's the author of the new book, Behind the Startup, How Venture Capital Shapes Work, Innovation, and Inequality. Ben, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. This show is only possible because listeners support us. If you're able to give right now, please check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.